Those that are staying here can turn again to our text. 1 Kings chapter 2. First Kings chapter 2, I believe, verses 1 and 2. Now the days of David drew nigh that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man. We've seen that the Bible definitely explains or endorses gender roles, as in some people are men, they need to act like men. And some people are women, and they need to act like women. And that doesn't mean that they're completely different, because they're not, obviously, but there are some differences. And we've seen some of the differences. And we've also seen that the Bible definitely, this is not just a culturally or a traditional aspect of it. This is something that the Bible definitely explains as part of God's design. And that's what we saw last time. And I'm wanting to move along because my wife said I need to move along. So I'm going to do that. We saw that there's a difference between the men and women's roles in the sense of showing God's authority and God's glory in our creation. And that is the idea that God is in the position of authority and the dominion and leadership in His relationship to people. And God created marriage to reflect those glories, those differences. Now there are other issues in the Bible about it. It talks about men living with their wives according to knowledge and giving honor unto them as unto the weaker vessel. It talks about women not usurping authority over the men, and it has to do with her creation that she was deceived in the transgression. And so we see a lot of these issues in the Bible explaining differences between men and women and what that actually means in a practical sense. If you get too hooked up on fairness or the idea of fairness, you might actually do more damage than you do good to yourself. The truth is, the Bible makes a clear distinction between gender roles, and whatever the differences are in our generation as opposed to other generations, whatever the differences are, we need to make sure we don't trash God's design in His gender roles. One of the points is in Deuteronomy 22, you don't have to go there, but in Deuteronomy 22 it says, the woman shall, 22 verse 5, the woman shall not wear that which pertaineth unto a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment. For all that do so are an abomination unto the Lord thy God. Now, people have had different types of clothing since forever. And we're not going to be bound to one type of clothing that they used to wear back in the days of Deuteronomy. So that in the Deuteronomy there's a law that says women shouldn't wear men's clothing and men shouldn't wear women's clothing. Well, frankly, I'm not going to wear what they used to wear back then. Clothes can change. Things can change. But what you do in the old law, which we are not under, by the way, but what you do in order to apply it right, to apply it well, is you look and see what is the principle that God is trying to get across to His people. And of course, the principle is don't trash the gender roles. Don't be pretending that they're all the same, that there's no difference, and that difference should be invisible. In other words, there is such a thing as fashion that belongs to women and fashion that belongs to men. Now, I agree there's some room for some change. I agree that there's some room for change. I don't believe that means that, you know, women always wear dresses and men always wear a certain kind of, well, I guess there are some cultures where men wear dresses and girls, you know, they wear something else. I don't know. But the point is, we don't have to be narrowed down into one specific type. I don't believe that we ought to try to emphasize at all the outward and say, women, you shouldn't wear pants. And you all have to wear dresses, and you all have to wear skirts, and it all has to be our traditional sense. Things can change, and cultures can change. But what doesn't change is God has a difference between men and women, and He wants that difference to be visible. He wants it to be clear which one you are if somebody's looking at you from behind. And the reason why, of course, is he wants some distinction. He wants some separation. I know that there are some cultures where men and women can't sit like y'all are sitting now. You know, men and women mixed up in the rows. No, all the women are on one side of the church and all the men are on the other side of the church. And I'm telling you, if I go into that culture, I'm not going to try to change that. I'm not going to tell them don't do that because that's part of it. God says, make a difference. Make a distinction. There ought to be a distinction. Now, you don't have to get all, you know, unmovable, rigid, and not allow any kinds of improvement. Things have changed in our time, and I think that some clothes are a lot more practical than other clothes, especially depending on the type of atmosphere you have in your work or whatever. So give a little bit of room for other people to have a little difference of opinion to yourself. It doesn't mean we have to have a certain type of clothes. What it does mean is we guard the difference. We make sure we maintain a distinction between the way men and women dress. And I believe that's just logical. That's just right because God wants there to be a clear distinction in society between men and women. Nowadays, this idea of let's just mix them all up so you can't tell. And I'm telling you, it's getting close to that. It's really getting close to where you can't tell. We have women lawyers wearing men's suits. Wearing men's suits. And you know, I don't know. It just seems a little strange. I don't know of any men lawyers wearing women's clothes, but I wouldn't put it past them. I wouldn't put it past them. Nowadays, we're in a very confused society. One more thing that I wanted to get a point to get across to you. Go ahead and turn to Isaiah chapter 3 and verse 12. Isaiah chapter 3 and verse 12. God says, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy path." Now, God very clearly makes a point here that it's a shame for men to be oppressed by children. And it's a shame for men to be ruled by women. Maybe that doesn't mean a whole lot to you, ladies, but people who are leading our nation, people who are leading our society, people who are taking us in a certain direction, whether through the news media or whatever, they are trashing this sense that men have of the shame that it is for us to be ruled or oppressed by children or ruled by women. Now, some women are much more capable than some men of even rulership. I would definitely vote for some women over some men any day of the week. It's very clear that some women are much more competent than men. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Gold in My Ear, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for Maggie Thatcher, and a lot of respect for women who have been showing themselves strong. And we read on one of these Sundays something that happened back in the days of the judges when Deborah was the one that God had given the gift to know His will and what have you, and the men were so timid and so fearful that even one of their greatest men, Barak, who was even listed in one of the ones of faith, it's amazing, and he won the battle and he did the whole thing, but the honor didn't go to him because he was afraid to do what he had to do unless Deborah went with him. Hold my hand, Deborah, I'm afraid. That's a shame. That's a shame. And men ought to have a sense of shame of that. There is a shame in that, to be ruled by women, to be ruled by children, or to be oppressed by children. Men ought to be better than that. And the reason why, of course, they're ruled by women is because they've lost their way. They've missed their calling. And maybe that is because of some evil demonic influence in their religious or their societal upbringing. And I wouldn't put it past what's happening nowadays in our society to be something spiritual, deeply spiritually wrong with our society. It could even be demonic. I think the demons do have their own doctrines. They do have their own agenda, what they're trying to push. And nowadays, people have really, literally lost their minds. So, I just wanted to make this point to you that the Bible clearly states that there's a difference between men and women and that these differences are intended by God, part of God's design. Now I want to get to the next point, which is manliness, what it is not. Manliness, what it is not. I wrote down a few things, and I'm not going to spend much time on this either. Manliness, what it is not. It's not the opposite of womanliness. It's not the opposite. If a man's supposed to be strong, that doesn't mean women are supposed to be weak. You'll find that there's I'm going to go over a couple of things on when I get into manliness, what it is. But just remember, we're not talking about opposites here. We're talking about complementary aspects. Things that work together well. How can I explain it? You remember, I don't know if some of you guys probably don't remember this. Even if you were alive back in those days, you probably didn't watch it. I used to watch a little show called Kung Fu. And there's this, some of you know about it. Some of you are laughing about it. There's this China guy, this Chinaman who's, I don't know, royal seed or whatever. He was raised and he was taught how to defend himself. And, you know, back in the day, Kung Fu or karate was a big deal. It might still be, I don't know. But back in the day, the idea was if you knew karate, well, you could beat up anybody for anything. You could be a small little person and beat them up. Well, this guy, he was called Grasshopper when he was little. And so the guru, the guy that's teaching him all these things, all old and wise, he shows this. Him and his one of his moves, he's trying to teach him something, and he says, "No, you're hitting it too hard," or then, "No, you're hitting it too soft." And Grasshopper's getting a little frustrated. And he says, "Well, it's like when you hold a dove in your hand. You want to hold it hard enough not to let it go, but not so hard that you crush it." Right? Well, you understand that, right? So you have more than one aspect that you have to pay attention to. And that's the difference between men and women. It has to do with what aspect has the greater strength or what aspect dominates. And the truth is, there are some aspects of character that dominate in men and some aspects of character that dominate in women. These are not opposites. They're complementary. You need them both. We'll get into that a little bit more. It's not prolonged adolescence. Manliness is not... Amen. Where you're just still a boy, still a child, you're still thinking in terms of, you know, puberty humor. Hello. Have you ever noticed that men have a tendency to hang on to their puberty humor? They use bodily functions as their cuss words. They can't get past their adolescence. It's like they feel like if they get past their adolescence, they become less of a male figure. And that's just ridiculous, folks. It's not prolonged adolescence. It's not staying immature forever, even though that's what some people have a tendency to think. It's not machismo. It means it's not dominating women. It's not showing your power over women or showing that you're better than women. It's not even a comparison so much as it's not even a contrast between yourself and women. In fact, that becomes machismo becomes very vile, very brutish, very sickening. The fact that some men feel like they have to act out against their wives because of their own impotence in the workplace, or you know, they've been ashamed somewhere else, and so they go home and beat up their wives, or they go get drunk and then brag about how tough they are. And this is machismo, but it is not manliness. Amen. It's not the same thing. It's a whole different concept. It's not appearance. It's not cosmetic. It's not what you look like. It's not the fact that you can grow a beard. It's not the fact that you can, you know, that you have muscles. That's not it at all. That's not manliness. Some of the manliest people in the world are frail, small men. It's not narcissism. That is, focus on yourself. It's not focus on your own abilities or whatever. So many cultures in the world, the men begin to focus on themselves and focus on their superiority, and it has become a real problem in a lot of cultures, where manliness is confused with narcissism, a complete introverted self-focus. And it has happened even in the United States. It's not nearly as bad here as in other countries. And finally, it's not typical masculine behavior. That's the problem we have since 1950. Everybody treats manliness as if it's typical masculine behavior. You know, like burping. Or disregard. Or carelessness. Or risk-taking. Or sports. Or aggressiveness. Or fighting. Or, or, you know, filthy language or drinking. You know, a man is the guy who can hold his liquor. That might be typical manly behavior. There's all our manliness, masculine behavior. It's typical, but that's not manliness. If you understand the definition of manliness, you'll find that manliness has to do with the ideal man, not the typical man. It's not typical manly behavior because it's not an automatic thing. It's not that every man is manly. You're not manly just because, you know, you finally reached 21 years old. That's not what makes a man manly. Manliness is an ideal character that you aspire to and you work to achieve all of your life. Manliness is not typical masculine behavior as in hunting and fishing and sporting and driving fast and being foolish. Men are not automatically manly. Well, that's the reason why David tells Solomon, show yourself a man. He already was a man. He already had a child. He already had a child. The guy was old enough to have a child. He was already well known as a wise man. They already said he's a wise man. They already talked about it. And yet he was considered still young and he still had some things to prove. He had some things to show. The concept is manliness, not supermanliness. It's not about something beyond our ability to achieve. Obviously, men can be manly. And it's appropriate for men to be manly. So we try to find out what it is. Manliness is the quality appropriate to men, expected in men, aspired to by men, achieved by admirable men, and intended by God in His design for men, as differentiated from women. All right, we read the definitions earlier. I'm going to go over them very briefly just so that I get the point before I move on. The earliest definition I could find was with courage like a man. That was Johnson's dictionary in 1755. In Noah Webster in 1828, manlike, becoming a man or becoming to a man, firm, brave, undaunted, dignified, noble, stately. Having qualities becoming a man, Webster's 1913. Having qualities becoming to a man, not childish or womanish. Manlike, especially brave, courageous, resolute, noble. Oxford English, 1933, possessing virtues proper to a man as distinguished from a woman or child, chiefly courageous, independent in spirit, frank and upright. And then, of course, later on, after 1950, some things changed, generally regarded as, but they still got the basic idea right. It's virtues ideal in a man. Virtues, if you take it by the Bible, it's virtues ideal in men according to God's design. All right. The idealization of the relative strengths of men as compared to animals, children, and women. All right. If you look in the dictionary and you try to put it all together so you understand what you should be expecting or what you should be aspiring to, here it is. Synonyms and all the dictionary definitions. You look at all these definitions in the dictionary and you throw together the synonyms to try to get a general idea of what manliness means in our culture before 1950. Courage, that is bravery, nerve, mettle, pluck. Strength, hardness, endurance, steadiness, stability, dignity, honor, stateliness, glory, self-awareness and self-confidence, nobility, superiority, uprightness, decency, gallantry, protectiveness, resolve, determination, decisiveness, independence, frankness, responsibility, willingness to lead, reliability, dutifulness, faithfulness, maturity. Now, I did an awful lot of reading of books before 1950, all the way back into the 1700s, even before that, trying to find this term and trying to put it together in the context. I came up with some explanations of manliness according to these literary contexts. So we can come up with these adjectives. Hardworking. Be amazed how much that's part of it. Manliness is hard working. Serious. Sober. Temperate. That's self-controlled. Forceful. Vigorous. Spirited. Competitive. Pugnacious. That means inclined to fight. Self-reliant. Self-confident. Self-esteeming, self-controlled, self-sacrificing, firm, tough, dogged, hardened, stout, hardy, calm. That's an interesting one. Calm. Dispassionate means not emotional. Stoic. Steadfast. Dauntless. And virile. Vigorous. Actually, that means capable of reproduction. Not sure why, but that was part of it. And there are some negatives after 1950 that I thought I'd throw out there just for you to understand. These are things you'll find in the context of people using the word manly after 1950. Stubborn, rash, careless, angry, aggressive, blustering, brash, macho, silly, childish, brutish, stupid, and superficial. There's a big difference between the way people thought of manliness. And I want you to know, manliness is the ideal, the proper character that a man should aim for. It's not automatic. It's not something you're automatically going to have. I want you to notice that it's not the opposite of womanliness. And we can, if you do the study like I've done it, you study out in pre-modern literature before 1950 and just study up on what was expected in men, what was expected in women. Sometimes they're wrong, and that's fine. We'll let people be wrong. It's okay. But you put it together and come up with adjectives that would describe what you would say is ideal in men and what is ideal in women, knowing that all men and all women have some of these qualities on both sides. These are contrasting, or I should say, relative, comparable attributes. Both of them are necessary. Take, for example, I'm going to go through them and then I'll touch on them briefly. Courage on the masculine side, it's constant. That's one of the main ones. Courage. On the feminine side, it's patience. And that's interesting. We both need patience and we both need courage. But courage is considered a manly attribute, and patience is considered a feminine attribute. Think about something that came to my mind when I was contrasting this. There was a pair of missionaries, a missionary couple named the Elliots, Jim Elliot and Elizabeth Elliot, that went to Ecuador back in the 50s, and they paired up with some other missionaries, and they had this desire to reach these unreached peoples, and there was this one very fierce unreached people way in the dense jungles named the Aucas, and they had killed a bunch of people, and so everybody was afraid of them, and they got it in their head that God was calling them to do that. And so they got together and made some plans and made some decisions, and they did some things, and they started their plan, and they had a, you know, I don't know, was it a 2-year plan or year and a half plan, whatever they were going to do. They were going to give presents. They were going to set out these things. They were going to establish some trust. They had a nice plan. It was a very manly plan. And it had a lot to do with courage and a lot to do with all the manly qualities. We're going to get this done. We're not going to be afraid. We're going to trust God. We're going to be straightforward with these people. Well, turns out 5 of these missionaries, finally, after they'd had established contact and they exchanged gifts and had some communication going on with them, they showed up, 5 of them showed up, and all of them were slaughtered and they were killed. All 5 of these men were killed. Nate Saint and Jim Elliot and some others. Anyway, they didn't succeed. But they had the courage and they had the metal, and they had the zeal, and they had the openness, and they had the competitiveness and the willingness and all of these great manly attributes. But over the period of the next 10 or 15 years, Elizabeth Elliot hung around, kept on going, kept on having the doors open, kept on, and Elizabeth Elliot won them all. Won the whole tribe. And so that's what I'm trying to say. You need both. And where a manly attitude might prevail in one situation, the womanly attribute might prevail in another situation. Right. You've got to have both of them. These men would have done well to listen to their wives and say, why don't we just do it with some patience? We got plenty of things we can do here. Let's just keep being patient on this. And so that's where you see a little bit of a difference in their attitude, and Elizabeth Elliot willing to do it little at a time, very slowly, 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 and just keep on keeping on, and finally is accepted. And of course, it also has something to do with the very fierce Aucas, and their fierceness had to do with their fear. And they were afraid of men, but they weren't afraid of women. Isn't that interesting? Because they weren't afraid of her, they didn't kill her. But she was accepted into their tribe, and she actually taught them, and they They got saved. They were transformed. All right, that's an interesting difference between courage and patience. But both are necessary in both of us. Strength and grace. Grace in the sense of elegance of action or carefulness in moves and that sort of things. But you know the difference between strength and grace. And we think of strength as a manly quality and grace as a feminine quality. And that's true. Well, we need them both. How about toughness with tenderness? We need some toughness. All of us. All of us need some toughness. We need a little tougher hide. We need to be able to handle some things. We need to take some things. People who lived 100 years ago could take an awful lot more than we can take. And that's because they went through an awful lot more than we go through. We also need some tenderness. We need some tenderness. Even men need to be tender. But we still think of toughness as a manly quality, and we think of tenderness as a feminine quality. Frankness and charm. There's a difference. A manly quality is just to tell you what I'm thinking. This is going to tell you what I'm... Look, I'm just going to come right out with it and tell you. This is the way it is. And I've been with, you know, female bosses that want to give you some constructive criticism, and so they sandwich it between the negative, they sandwich between two positives. They say, well, first of all, you've been doing this really well. And we have one little problem over here. And then third of all, you've been doing this other thing really well. That's what they call sandwiching. And that's a way, you know, it's sort of like charm. We're going to get this thing done. I don't like that. I'd rather them just tell me what it is that you're criticizing me about, and I'll be upset for a little while, but I'll get over it, and I'll straighten it out, and I'll fix it. But there is a difference between frankness and charm, and we consider this friendly attitude that some people have, we consider that a feminine grace, a feminine strength. And frankness, we consider it a masculine strength. Forcefulness and delicacy. Sometimes you need more force. Sometimes you just got to put a little more strength into it, a little more elbow grease, a little more hard work. Push it. Let's get it done. And sometimes you need a little bit of delicacy. You need to take some, you know, I imagine when, you know, you're dealing with somebody's wound or somebody's broken arm, you need a little bit of delicacy. You might need to be careful. Anybody who's been to a dentist who's terribly masculine and says, you know, you can handle this, let's get this done, zip, zip, zip. Or a dentist that's got a little more delicacy, a little more charm, and maybe not quite so rough on you. You know which one you'd choose. All right. Independence and nurturing. Independence, of course, ascribed to men. And women need to be independent too. It's just not quite as natural for a woman to be independent. A woman is more nurturing. Men need to be nurturing too. But it's just not quite as appropriate or not quite as natural for a man to be bonding. Okay. All right. Dignity and beauty. We can see the difference in the sense of what dignity is and in the sense of what beauty is. Women have an appreciation for harmony or for beauty or for elegance, detail. They have a better appreciation. I can't tell you how many times Deb and I have talked about, hey, did you see that new couple in church? And I'll say, oh yeah, you mean the ones that were sitting on the back row with the ones on this side over here. And it, well, I was talking about the woman that had the lavender, you know, little thing on her shoulders. And, you know, I didn't see her clothes. I don't know what she looked like. I don't know. I just know where she was sitting. And yeah, she came in with a child. And that's a difference in our viewpoint, a difference in our look, and our look on things. And that is definitely there. And it's a definite different difference between manliness and womanliness. Resolve and understanding. Resolve in the sense of decisiveness and understanding in the sense of sensitivity, perhaps. Competitiveness and sympathy. I'm telling you, I've actually heard it out of Debbie's lips. Why does there somebody have to be a loser? I hate it. You see, watch the basketball game and one of the teams is losing. She always roots for the underdog. She always roots for the underdog. Why would you root for the team that prepared less? You know, You ought to root for the team that prepared harder and more, and when they win, hey, the right team won. But no, there's also some need for sympathy. Poor losers. Seriousness and quietness. Those might be very similar. Seriousness and quietness. And this is where not prolonged adolescence comes in. Get serious, men. There's got to be some seriousness. It's part of the biblical definition, which we're getting ready to get to. Quietness and meekness is definitely in the Bible. Tells you that it's very precious in a woman to be both quiet and meek. Impassiveness or stoicism and emotion or sensitivity, or compassion, whatever you want to call it. Men aren't as quite as emotional as women. The truth is, you ought to cry less, man. Stop crying. But we don't really hold it against a woman if she, you know, gets into a fit of weeping. Well, maybe we do, but we probably shouldn't. The truth is, it's just natural. God made us different, and these differences aren't wrong. One is not wrong while the other is right. One is not even superior to the other. That's not the right type of adjectives to put on them. They're different, and they have different needs. And so if they are different, and we have different needs for these things, and all of us need all of it to some degree, that doesn't mean that there is no contrast between manliness and womanliness. It's a necessary contrast. Now, this is what I wanted to get to. It's what I've been trying to get to all month. Manliness, recognized and defined in the Bible. We're going to read some verses. We've already read this one in 1 Kings chapter 2, where David says, "Show thyself a man." It's something to be aspired to, something to go for. I'm going to read several verses and deal with some of the issues involved, and hopefully we can make some progress in our understanding of what we are expected to be, by God at least. Who cares what our wonderful society used to think manliness was? I think our society is just about as excellent a society as ever been before 1950. I mean, seriously, study societies in the past and there's been all kinds of problems, but our American concepts of right and wrong and justice and these things, they've been pretty good. Pretty good. I'm not in any way downgrading America or Americans, but truth is, we've been wrong before, and we could still be wrong, and even our tradition, even our dictionary definitions, even looking in the literature that we've written, they could be wrong too. We could be wrong in our concept of it. We've been wrong on lots of things. But if you can find it in the Bible and find out what God gives us, and try to separate it from what is purely cultural back in the Oriental days when they had their ways. Man, truly understand what God is saying that has to do with a manly character. Maybe God is teaching us something, and maybe we could actually improve ourselves and be like we're supposed to be. All right, I've read some of these. I'm just going to repeat them because I got out of order. 1 Samuel chapter 4. 1 Samuel chapter 4. Look at verse 9. Let's go ahead and read verse 7. "And the Philistines were afraid, for they said, God is come into the camp," that is of the Israelites. "And they said, woe unto us, for there hath not been such a thing heretofore. Woe unto us, who shall deliver us out of the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods that smote the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness." Then what did the Philistines say? "Be strong and quit yourselves like men, O ye Philistines, that ye be not servants unto the Hebrews as they have been to you. Quit yourselves like men and fight." Now, this isn't the only time this phrase is used, "quit yourselves like men." And quit doesn't mean quit as in our sense of stop doing something. Quit means more like our word acquit. It means prove yourself or act responsibly or do your duty. That's what it has to do with. Quit yourselves like men. It's a reflexive term, and that's more than I want to get into right here. Just to understand, it says like men. Quit yourselves like men. Make yourself accountable like men. Show yourselves that you are men. And how do you have to be that way? How does it say? Be strong. Be not servants. And fight. That gives you a clue what the Bible is talking about when it talks about being like men. I'm going to skip on to 2 Samuel chapter 10. We read this a couple of Sundays ago. I didn't get into any explanation on it. I just want to repeat it. 2 Samuel chapter 10. Look at verse 12. Be of good courage and let us play the men for our people and for the cities of our God, and the Lord do that which seemeth unto Him good. Let us play the men. And the point here is courage. And you can find it over there in Chronicles where the same exact thing is said, except instead of saying play the men, it says behave ourselves valiantly. It has to do with courage. And folks, we need some courage. Men need to have some courage in our society, and we all as Christians need to be more like men and have some courage. And I think we're really going to be needing it come the next few generations. Courage. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 13. Last chapter of 1 Corinthians, right before 2 Corinthians. Look at verse 13. Paul is saying, watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong. All right, here are all basically the same type things. He says, watch, that means be vigilant. Stand fast, in other words, don't back away, don't run, don't retreat, hang on. You can handle it. Quit you like men, in other words, do your responsibilities, do your duty as a man, and be strong. There again, we see the be strong. That means emotionally strong, by the way. Look at Job 38, verse 3. I'm giving you a rundown of all these verses, and we're going to put them all together. Job 38. This is God telling Job to act like a man. Try to piece it together, folks, in your mind. What is God telling us? 38 verse 3, God says, gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee and answer thou me. Look at chapter 40 and verse 7. Just turn the page. Gird up thy loins now like a man. I will demand of thee and declare thou unto me. Girding of the loins. The loins is the abdomen. This is the loins, or we might call it the waist. Gird up, put your belt on tight. Hang on, because I'm going to give you a little bit of a rough ride here. It had to do with men who were workers. Men who were workers, were physical workers, they girded up their loins. And they were being strong. You want to understand what girding your loins? It has to do with strength. Even in Proverbs, it talks about the woman who girded up her loins with strength and worked. That has to do with the working. And I have to believe that God expects men to be workers. Look at Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 17. Jeremiah chapter 1 and verse 17. Thou therefore gird up thy loins and arise and speak unto them all that I command thee. Be not dismayed at their faces, lest I confound thee before them. That has to do with having some emotional strength. Gird up your loins. You've got some things to do. You need to get serious about it. You need to be a worker about it. You need to get it done. Don't be afraid. Don't be dismayed. Don't be nervous. Don't be embarrassed. Wow, that's pretty good stuff. Luke chapter 12, verse 35. Luke chapter 12, verse 35. Jesus says, let your loins be girded about and your lights burning, and ye yourselves like unto men that wait for the Lord when He will return from the wedding. Basically, you need to be aware, you need to be awake, you need to be vigilant, you need to have your lights turned on, you have to be dutiful, you have to be ready. That means keep your loins girded about. Even when they did the Passover, He said, you're going to eat this Passover in the evening, but keep your loins girded. Don't loosen up, because you're gonna be ready to get up and move. You keep your loins girded. That means be ready. Okay, look at 1 Peter 1:13. First Peter 1, verse 13. Peter says, "Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind." How does he explain that? Be sober and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Basically, he's saying you need to be sober and you need to be optimistic. You need to be sober and hope to the end. You need to hang on to that hope. You need to... There are so many stories that illustrate this attitude of men in times of very much difficulty. I get a kick out of when in Argonne they were fighting and they were surrounded and it was in the winter and they were starving and they didn't have any chance of recovery, any help. And so the German commander sent an offer of surrender to the general. And the general just replied with the word nut. They were in a horrible situation, folks, a horrible situation. But it stopped the German advance, the last German advance of the war. That stopped it at that spot because they wouldn't quit. They wouldn't give in. They kept on hoping to the end, even though they were starving and it wasn't looking good. Now, one of my favorites is 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. I'm going to read verse 14. Of these things put them in remembrance, charging them before the Lord that they strive not about words to no profit, but to the subverting of the hearers. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Shun profane and vain babblings. They will just be more destructive, what have you. The point here is that one word, I really like it, workman. He's a workman. He's a man that knows what work is. And he can handle it. He can handle the work. I think this is probably one of the biggest points that God is trying to make about men, even in our generation. We've come to the point where we're pretty leisurely. We find men nowadays are much more interested in play than in work. What does it say here? You don't want to strive to no profit. What does he say? That they strive not about words to no profit. And a workman is the kind of person that focuses on profit. Focuses on, I'm not talking about just cash. I'm talking about some advantage, some provincial, some improvement, some gain that they're getting by their labor. And I can't tell you just how much our generation has lost when it comes to the concept of getting something done that's important. Getting something done for tomorrow. Most of us are much better at procrastinating and waiting till later. It's like you say, you know, when it's not raining, you don't need to fix the roof because it's not raining. And when it's raining, you can't fix the roof because it's raining. Right? Well, that's the idea of our society. It's about using what we can right now and enjoying the moment. I've heard that so many times. Enjoy the moment. Maybe there is some oriental truth to that, but there's also a whole lot of wrong to that about enjoying the moment. That's the reason why our American society is more in debt than ever. In fact, we have more debt than we have savings. It's amazing. Now, I want you to realize, I'm not going to preach on debt, folks. I'll preach on that later. But I want you to know that debt is enjoying now and forgetting about tomorrow. Debt is taking your good stuff now and worrying about it later. There's a real problem with that. There is a problem with it because it has to do with the mindset of getting what I can right now. Who cares what it does to our children? Our government is in the worst shape it's ever been. It's ready to go under. In fact, any day now it could go under because they can't compromise. They can't figure out a way to extend our debt limit. I can't tell you how irresponsible and unmanly an attitude that is. It's about, let's take care of now and we'll worry about later, later. There's something wrong with our attitude, folks. And when we lost the concept of work and the concept of duty and the concept of accountability, and we lost all of that, we lost the manly aspects of our society. And when I say we have an effeminate society, I'm not just speaking to, you know, hyperbolically, trying to make you, you know, make a point, a smaller point. This is a huge point. Our society has become effeminized. Now, that's not all bad. That's not all bad. Being feminine or being womanly is not bad. But if we're leaning all together that way, we lose our manliness as a society. It's causing problems right now. The concept of let's take care of all the poor and needy now, no matter how irresponsible that might be. All the concepts that we have nowadays in our has to do with the effeminization of society. And that's, I know it's not politically correct. I know it's not what people want to hear. And I'm just not going to care what people want to hear. I'm going to try to just say it like it is. I'm going to try to be manly and be frank. All of the masculine strengths, what we call manliness, are denigrated in our society. They are diminished. They are minimized. They are underappreciated. You name them. Whatever it is. Courage? Minimized. Have you ever heard the statement, wisdom is the better part of valor? And that's a wonderful statement if you've got any valor. If you've got any bravery at all, yeah, you need some wisdom. But if you ain't got no valor, just don't use that statement. That's just stupid. You've got to have some bravery. You've got to have some courage. And right now, that's not the big thing now. I tell you, I have been proud of our presidents when they show some valor. When they show some willingness to take a risk and do the right thing. I've been proud of them. I've been proud of all of our soldiers when they show some valor and they show some strength. I want them to be wise. I want them to know how to duck. I think they even need to know how to retreat orderly. Not in a panic, but orderly retreat, protecting each other and doing all those are necessary. That's not necessarily wrong. But sooner or later, somebody's got to have some courage. Otherwise, we are sunk as a society. All right, the associations in the Bible context that we found, I emphasized them when I read these things. You'll notice strength, strong. Manliness is strong, firmness, endurance. Manliness is not servants. It has to do with independence, folks. It has to do with not depending on someone else. Dignity. Another one that's common to them is fight. Fight. You got to have some fight in you. You need to have some moxie. You got to have some strength of mind where you say, I'm not backing up anymore. Man, these are the greatest stories in the Bible. That man that was running and they run all the whole place was running and he stopped in his field of beans. I don't know if it was his field of beans or somebody else's. He said, I'm tired of running. I'm not running anymore. He stood and fought. He stood and fought. And they said he fought for so long and killed so many people that when the battle was won and it turned around the whole battle, they couldn't get his hand off of his sword. These are stories of feats of valor. Fight. Manliness is competition. It's forcefulness. It's a willingness to fight. Courage and bravery. Willingness to fight. Stand fast is also found in the Bible context of manliness. Stand fast. Constancy, resolve, and determination. And then loins girded. That has to do with the work ethic. And the being sober and standing fast and standing firm on your duties and your responsibilities. And that's where you get that phrase, the workman that needeth not to be ashamed. And a lot of us ought to be ashamed of our work ethic. Amen. I don't have time to keep going, but that's what I'm going to deal with next week. Hopefully finish it out.